Hi, my name's David Walker and I'm from Brisbane, Australia, and welcome to the Brain Tumor Podcast. For more than two decades now, I've been a consultant neurosurgeon and treated patients with brain tumors. One thing that comes up time and time again from patients and their families is, how do I find out more? People always ask lots of questions, or they have lots of questions to ask, but they just don't have time to ask them. And when they in front of the doctors, they just forget to ask them. Often people are so stressed out when they're with the doctors that the questions they want to ask just don't come to them. So this is what the Brain Tumor Podcast is all about. Its aim is to educate and inform. It's to provide much needed information for those wishing to find out more about brain tumors. With the information I provide here, I hope that you'll feel better equipped to deal with what you're up against. And believe me, particularly if you're a patient or family member going through the crisis of a brain tumour, the recent diagnosis, well, I do understand what you're going through. Now, the episodes will not be long-winded or very detailed, but they will cover the most important points. It's aimed primarily at the patients with brain tumours and their families and close friends, but may be useful for others such as medical or nursing students, nurses or even medical practitioners, or anyone really who wants to know more about brain tumours. It's not really aimed for specialists in the field. There's plenty of information out there for them. I'm going to try to keep it fairly basic because I believe that's where the need is most. But at times, I'll need to explore some fairly detailed and difficult concepts. I'm confident, though, that listeners will be able to understand all of the information I present. I'm going to cover a variety of topics from the very basic to the more advanced. There'll be some topics that will be relevant to an individual and some won't be. The idea is that each episode will last around 15 minutes. Sometimes they may go shorter, sometimes they may go longer. Occasionally I might get a guest in to talk about a specific subject. The kind of topics I'll be covering in the individual episodes are things like, what is a brain tumor and how do I know I've got one? Who do they affect? What tests are done for brain tumours and what are the differences between these tests? Another episode will cover the surgery for brain tumours. Another one on gliomas and glioblastoma. Another episode could cover low-grade glioma. These things haven't been quite worked out yet, but they're the sort of topics I'll be covering. There'll be episodes on radiotherapy. There'll be an episode on chemotherapy, at least one. Metastatic brain tumours, meningiomas, pituitary tumours, acoustic neuromas, all sorts of topics will be covered. It's an exhaustive list, and if you have any feedback or suggestions, please get in touch. Please help the podcast by giving us a good rating. That helps us get in front of more people, just like you, and therefore potentially help them as well. So if you have suggestions or feedback, please let me know. Send me an email. All small case, Professor David Walker, no gaps, at brisbrain.com.au. Have a great day. Hi, this is David Walker with another episode of the Brain Tumor Podcast. Today I want to talk about what to expect after a brain tumor operation. It's one of those things that never really gets covered or explained very well. But it's obviously at front of mind for someone who's going through that procedure. And whether that procedure is a biopsy or a major resection, every operation will have some impact and it will take some time to get over it. So that's what I really want to try to give some feel for today. It obviously depends on the person, firstly, whether they're otherwise healthy, young and fit, a child versus an elderly adult, and secondly, what sort of operation they're having. Clearly, recovery from a biopsy is going to be quicker and easier than recovering from a major resection that takes many, many hours to perform. A biopsy is generally through a small incision and a burr hole or just a small drill hole through the skull. And that usually is very minimally disruptive. It's a very quick operation. And often that person could go home after one or two nights in hospital. Usually the person will stay in for a little bit longer, in, at least in my experience, because there are other things to be sorted out for that person. For instance, the diagnosis has to be finalised through pathology, and that may take a few days. And it's often much more important that that gets sorted out and a plan be put in place before a person goes home, not knowing really what the next step is. It can be done, and some patients are happy to do that if they get good support at home. But a biopsy, it said, is very a straightforward procedure and usually goes very well with very little risk of complications, although it's not zero risk, and problems can arise. And obviously, if there is a problem, the recovery will be a lot slower. Now, recovery from a brain tumour resection, that is a craniotomy resection, is a different situation. And there's also a great deal of variability in that. Let's take resection of a metastatic brain tumour as an example. That procedure is generally fairly quick and easy, often through a small incision and a small craniotomy, and the disruption to the surrounding brain is generally minimal, because we're not trying to resect any surrounding brain, we're just going straight to the tumour and removing it. So usually the recovery from that is very quick. A person might spend one night in a high dependency unit or ICU, depending on the hospital setup, and a few nights in hospital to get over it. And again, it depends on how things go, the general medical situation, but after a few days, a person can usually be discharged home quite safely. That is a little bit different to the situation where a patient is having resection of a primary glial tumour, a glioma, either it be malignant or low-grade gliomas. And they are bigger operations than resection of a metastatic tumour. And as such, the recovery is usually slower. So a person... that operation often will take a couple of hours to do, and of course it's highly variable, but usually a couple of hours to do. The approach, the incision, the craniotomy is generally bigger, although not always a very big and minimally invasive procedure. Techniques can be achieved, but the advantage of that is debatable. So the approach, the incision and the craniotomy, is often more extensive when resecting a primary tumour versus a biopsy or resecting a secondary brain tumour. And because of that, the recovery is slower and a person may spend one or two nights in intensive care and several days, even up to a week in hospital. It does depend, and I tend to be more conservative and I don't really want to... discharge patients before they're really ready and their family is ready and before the diagnosis is confirmed and a management plan put in place and other specialists such as radiation and medical oncologists get involved in the management. So I think all of those are more important than actually discharge as soon as medically possible. And many of my colleagues will agree with that. Now, resecting a meningioma may be very simple and the person may be able to be discharged after a couple of nights in hospital, but a very large meningioma requiring an extensive approach, perhaps a skull-based approach, sometimes even with a team of surgeons, now that's a much bigger deal and the person may be... And that procedure may take many hours. The person may be in intensive care for several nights. Very occasionally, they may be even on a ventilator electively after that procedure. And they may spend a week or more in hospital just recovering from that procedure, even if there are no complications. So the recovery from a brain tumour procedure is highly variable, depending on the type of operation and the type of tumour we're dealing with. Of course, it always, as I mentioned before, always has a big part to play is what type of patient is going through this procedure. A child will can recover very quickly but may need longer in hospital. A young adult who's otherwise fit and healthy will usually recover quicker than an older person who may have other medical issues that need attention in hospital for a longer period. So that's a big factor as well about the length of stay and the recovery after procedures. I want to talk a little bit about incisions. That's a common question. Incisions in the scalp generally heal very well. They can be closed with absorbable stitches which don't need to be removed, and that's my preference. But many colleagues, and there's no right answer here, use either staples or sutures that need to be removed at around the 7 to 10 day mark. Now, sometimes a little bit shorter, sometimes a little bit longer. But that's generally what we can and what patients can expect with their incisions. I generally leave the dressings on for several days and then they can be removed. I often use a tissue glue on the surface to help healing and make it waterproof to an extent as well. So after a few days, patients can usually have showers, I think, quite safely. But it's all surgeon dependent, and we all have our little preferences about the care of the wounds. Quite often a patient after having a craniotomy will have their head wrapped up in a big bandage, and that serves a couple of purposes. Firstly, it does reduce the chance of scalp swelling and hematoma. And that's an important thing, but it also aids in just stopping the patient themselves scratching or playing with the dressing, at least for a couple of days. But the main purpose of a head wrap is to actually enable the scalp to be pushed down, as it were, to the skull, so that hematomas or collections of blood don't develop. Now, I mentioned intensive care or high dependency stay before, and the reason that's important is because in the first few hours particularly, but usually often up to 24 hours, the risk of complication and very serious complications such as bleeding is present after a brain tumour procedure, whether it be a biopsy or a resection. And in those settings, the one-on-one nursing care and frequent observation is key in early detection of complications like that developing. So that's why patients are often in an intensive care, and if the hospital has it, a neurosurgical or neuroscience high dependency unit, where there's ready access to nurses and quick access to medical staff if required. It's rare that a patient is discharged straight to the ward, because in most circumstances, certainly in the Australasian setting, the nursing cover is not as intensive, and so the observations are not as frequent, and the early detection of complications is not, it may not occur. So that's intensive care in HDU. Now, patients and their families often want to know what they should expect after discharge from hospital. Well, as a general guideline, recovery from a brain tumour resection operation takes up to about a month. And when I say that, I mean that it's quite tiring. Patients don't have the same energy for about a month after a brain tumour resection. And sometimes that lingers on for a little while after that. So I would mostly say to a person with an uncomplicated tumour resection that they will need to plan about a month off work. Generally speaking, we give them some guidance about what they should and shouldn't do during that time, and it's more or less common sense. People can be left, if they don't have any problems after surgery, can be left unsupervised, but we recommend that they don't swim by themselves or take baths by themselves, etc., because of the risk of having a seizure. We do recommend some gentle daily exercise, but gentle is a key word. So walking 30 minutes a day, building up to about a 60 minutes walking a day over a few weeks is appropriate. And that brings me to the question of driving. Well, in Queensland at least, and I think most states of Australia, there's a legal requirement to abstain from driving for a period of time after a craniotomy and resection of a brain, for craniotomy per se, but obviously that includes a resection of a brain tumour. In Queensland, it's 6 months. The reason for that is that there is a small chance after having that procedure of having a seizure or other complications, which obviously is not a good idea when a person's driving a vehicle to themselves and to others on the road. So that's quite inconvenient, and the risk of seizures is low, but it's not zero. So I think it's a conservative yet good policy, and only in exceptional circumstances, when such as a cerebellar tumour, where the risk of seizures is extremely low, if not zero, and that the person's made a very good recovery, would I personally think that a person could go back to driving sooner than the 6 months. Now, what if something goes wrong? Well, all sorts of complications can develop after a brain tumour procedure. Bleeding, swelling, seizures, infection, CSF leak, all of these things, whilst rare, can happen. And of course, that can set a person's recovery back significantly, depending on the severity of that complication and how they recover and what their other medical status is. So if a person does have a problem, well, really the normal recovery is going to be altered and is going to be slower. The person may need inpatient rehabilitation, say spending a week or so in hospital, and then if they got, let's just say, have some weakness in one side of the body after a procedure, they may not be able to look after themselves at home safely. So we recommend some rehabilitation as an inpatient, and that may be a couple of weeks. And often people will recover significantly over that period of time and then be able to get back to normal life. But sometimes permanent problems occur, unfortunately, and that is the risk of neurosurgery, the risk of brain tumour procedures, and long-lasting permanent deficits may occur. Some of them a person can adapt to and live with, others are very significant and unfortunately change the life of that person so much that they can't live at home. But fortunately, for the patients undergoing neurosurgical procedures and the people looking after them, those risks are small. In fact, the chances of that happening is rare. Yeah. So I hope that all gives you some idea about what to expect if you're facing a brain tumour procedure. The most important point is that there is a great deal of variability with every individual being different and every procedure being different. Thanks again for listening. The information in this podcast is general in nature, and it's not a substitute for the medical advice that you get from your own doctors. I'm not able to provide specific information or advice relating to your condition or anyone's individual condition in this podcast. But if you do have suggestions or feedback, please let me know and send me an email at professordavidwalker@brisbrain.com.au. That's all small case, professordavidwalker@brisbrain.com.au. Thanks very much. Have a great day.